Thank you for joining us this morning. If this is your first time here, my name is Scott. I'm one of the elders here at the church, and we're just thrilled you're here today. And we'd love just to get to know you a little bit more after the service. But thank you for being here. For those that have been here, you know we're in the middle of a series called Make It Make Sense, A Framework for Wisdom. We've been looking at wisdom through Proverbs and how it applies to us in our personal lives, in our growth, in our relationship with Jesus Christ and to the world around us. And today we're going to talk about friends for the way, how wisdom shapes our relationships. That's what we're diving into through the Proverbs. We live in this era of this ache for friendship. You've heard it said that we're the most connected generation in history, yet the most disconnected. Now, you're probably tired of hearing about that. We're lonely even though we've got these connection devices in our hands. And at the same time, we want some alone time, but we don't want to be left alone. We don't want to be left out. And there's this convoluted, you know, this tension in there that makes people anxious, the FOMO, fear of missing out, yet at the same time, I don't want to commit to anything either because there might be something better coming up. And this pendulum swings back and forth in our life. And we navigate this tightrope of tension between in contact with people versus in relationship with people. And I think we need to think about what does God call us to do? Because God is more than just in contact with us. He wants us to be in relationship with him. And everything we're going to look at today flows through the example God sets for us and how he enters into our life and he navigates that fatherhood friendship with us. I share some interesting things because this whole disconnection thing, the district I'm working in now, schools made a choice to ban phones in classrooms. And this is becoming a trend across the country. And I think you all know the research. But they made this ban, and then the two middle schools went as far as like, we're not going to have it in the hallways or at lunchtime. And what was interesting is that as I spoke to those principals, one of the principals told me, he goes, you got to come out and look at lunch. Lunch is just different now. So I went out to the middle school, and I hung out there and watched lunch. And they're right. Kids are sitting at tables. Their heads are up. They're talking, they're engaging, they're communicating, they're laughing. Back when there's time to go outside and hang out and play, most junior hires weren't doing that. Now they are. They're outside more, they're doing more. Even if it's raining, they go out there and they do things. And what it led to is just more of this like connection and talking and more in community. Now there's still mischief, but it's mischief because they're getting into mischief together rather than mischief on their phones or devices, which is still happening. It's not perfect, but it just reinforced this idea of, all right, we need friends. And friendship is weird, right? It's this weird dynamic. Like you meet a human you've met, and you make a connection, and you go, yep, I like this one, and you and I are gonna do stuff together the rest of our lives. We don't get to pick our family, but we get to pick our friends. And the way that we end up friends is awkward and strange at times, but we are in what researchers call a friendship recession. And we are more connected to our work than we ever have been. In fact, psychologists are now saying that people's identity is being more formed by their work and their career and the people at their work than anything else. In fact, when you ask people, what do you do? What's the first thing they go to? Work. It's interesting when they ask that question to people in different countries around the world, what do you do? Well, I like to build boats. I like to hike. I like to do, that was about things they did in life. But we have this identity thing around friendship and work that everything has to be in the same bubble, and that's not how it's intended. Harvard started a study 80 years ago. It was a study that set out to look about happiness, and it turned into more about fulfillment. What is it in people's lives that over a course of a study helps them feel fulfilled in life? And they've been doing this for 80 years. And it's moved from 739 young men they chose, all 19-year-old boys. Most of them were students at Harvard. The other percentage of them were students from the most impoverished parts of Boston at the time, 1938. And every 2 years, they would meet with these individuals again and track their physical health, mental health, spiritual health, and relational health. And they would check in with them and go along. And over the first 50 years of the study, they found amazing insights. I'm going to read to you from Dr. Robert Waldinger, who is the third current lead researcher on this project. He writes, "When we gathered together everything we knew about these boys at the age of 50 It wasn't their middle-age cholesterol levels that predicted how they were going to grow or how they were doing. It was how satisfied they were in their relationships. The people who were most satisfied in their relationships at age 50 turned out to be the most healthiest at 80. Think about that statement. He goes on to make a statement in his book. He goes, loneliness is more destructive than alcoholism. And the people from this group have done all sorts of things with them. One of them became president. I'll get it right this time. John F. Kennedy was in this original group. Others became CEOs. Others became factory workers. Others became salesmen. Others ended up in prison. Some passed away. Almost 75% of them served in a war somewhere along the way. So it's not like their life was always easy. Yet relationships were the center. And then he interestingly says, but this is not new learning. This has been around since ancient times. And we as believers should understand that this has been around since the beginning of time. And as we look at this framework for wisdom in our lives, we want to look at what does Proverbs tell us about relationships, specifically our friendships. And we're going to examine how wisdom shapes these friendships and how we should be involved in shaping relationships. Here's our big idea. And we're going to come back to this at the end. Wisdom isn't a solo sport. People around us are shaping who we are for better or for worse. This ache for friendship was identified early by God, our creator, when he made Adam, put him in the garden, said, hey, I want you to take care of the garden. Now go name all the animals. And then he said something very profound. God looked down and he said, it is not good for man. You all know it. And we could take that verse and put it into our lives today. It is not good for, insert name here, Scott, to be alone. Martin Luther said this about that verse. He says, God created man for society, not for solitude. Not that solitude is wrong. Trust me, I like my solitude. I like to be alone at times. I go on hikes alone. I go off into the wilderness alone, sometimes for a couple days. And now my kids make me text them and tell them where I'm going. Because one time I was gone for a few days, and they're like, we had no idea where you were, Dad. Now, they're in college, not when they were little. That would be just wrong. But solitude's not bad. But it's interesting, isn't it, that when we're little, we want to do everything by ourselves. You remember, like, Mom, look at me. I can ride my bike by myself. You know, Dad, look at me. I can climb this tree by myself. I can do it. No, I don't want your help. I can do it myself. I can get dressed myself. And they come out, and you're like, you're not wearing that to school. But I did it myself. And then we grow up, and we find ourselves sitting at home alone at night, and I'm like, all by myself. It switches. So we want to be on our own, but we won't want to be alone. We want to be left alone, but we don't want to be left out. It's this intriguing dynamic, this tension that we have. And we found out that it's not the quantity of friends you have, but the quality of friends that you have. So what can we learn about Scripture, not just about gaining friends, but about being a friend? Because when I first went into this, I was thinking, wow, what does my friendship look like? And then I realized, how can I be a good friend? So as we go through this today, I want you to also be thinking about not just who in your life are friends and what they're, how they're helping you grow, but how are you being a friend and helping others grow? That's what I want our mindset to be. We're going to look at three passages in Proverbs today that share wisdom about friendship and how friendship benefits us, but more importantly, how we benefit others and that we're not made to do this alone. It's not a solo journey, and wisdom is not gained or shared in isolation. It is found in real friendships, friendships centered in the faith around God for believers. So let's examine these three truths and see what they have to say. Truth number one, friends form you. Before I read Proverbs, I'll read you a good quote here. How about this, friends, right here? Real friends don't get offended when you insult them. They smile and then call you something even worse. Been there? Right? We are best friends, and always remember that if you fall, I will pick you up, but only after I finish laughing. That's our thoughts of friends. So let's go into this. Friends form you. Proverbs 13:20 says this. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffer harm. A companion of fools suffers harm. What this verse is teaching us is this. You become like the people you spend the most time with. Imagine that. Your friends are your future in seed form. They just haven't grown yet, or you haven't grown yet. As you grow with them, they're going to grow based on how you water one another. Think of someone who has influenced somebody in your life for the better or for the worse. Think of someone that's influenced you for the better or the worse. I had a few of those friends when I was a kid. The influence is palpable. It's powerful. And we see this as adults in our kids, don't we? And yet we have to let them learn some of that process. My question to you is, what traits, qualities, or actions are evident in the way that you're influencing others? Are you someone who influences others for the better or the worse? The Message translation of this verse reads this way. Become wise by walking with the wise. Hang out with fools and watch your life fall to pieces. Right? Thank you for laughing. I thought that was great when I read that. I'm like, I've been with a few people and my life fell to pieces. That wasn't good. But show me your friends and I'll show you your future. As believers, we need to be intentional about who our close friends are. We started this Wise series on the fear of the Lord begins with wisdom. So if we're going to be with wise people, do those wise people fear the Lord? Not that all our friends need to be believers, but your close friends, your influential friends, do they fear the Lord? That might be the first wise thing to check out. So as we walk through this, here's the application. Be intentional about who you spend the most time with. Be intentional. Ask yourself, are my closest relationships helping me grow in wisdom or pulling me away from it? Here's a takeaway. Your friendships will either form your future or fracture it. Choose wisely. And then where do you play a part in all of that? Truth number two, friends stick with you. Friends stick with you. Here you go. Here's another one I'll read to you because I like these funny little quotes. All right. I'd walk through fire for my best friend. Well, maybe not fire because it's dangerous. But maybe a super hot, humid room. Well, not too hot or too humid because, you know, my hair doesn't look good in humidity. That's not a friend that sticks with you. You got to stick with people. Now, I said this in first service and nobody raised their hands because it really dated me and I felt really all alone up here. There was a song by Huey Lewis called Stuck With You. Remember that song or Stuck On You? Remember that song? Thank you. I was standing up here like, nobody knows this song. It's the idea, what does it mean to be stuck with somebody? That doesn't sound good, like stuck with them. Let's read Proverbs. Proverbs 17:17. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. See, real friends don't just walk in when life is good. They walk in when life is hard. They become present and persistent in the midst of your problems. Wow, I just made that one up right on the spot, Allison. That was pretty good, wasn't it? I'm going to write that one down, all right? They become present and persistent in the midst of your problems. See, God designed friendship to be a shelter for us during the storm, just like he is. And we are to be a reflection of Christ on earth as we are when we eventually get to heaven. And we need to be that in our friendships. Contrast some of your fair-weather friends or, you know, circumstantial friends, or maybe some online friendships that often aren't really there for you when you need someone. It is in the difficulties of life that forge our friendships. Friends that strive together thrive together. And that is exactly what that Harvard study showed. If you have relationships that strive with you in the difficulties of life, they will thrive with you and you will thrive later in life. And that is the story of Jesus. The disciples had to strive in order to thrive. And that is how our relationships to be. It reminds me of friends that own a truck. I bought an F-150 recently and I became that friend with a truck. Anybody else in the audience that friend with a truck? There's a weight and responsibility, people, that come with owning a truck. You think we get them just because they're cool and we love the way it makes us look as we're driving? That's true. But there's a responsibility because if you're the guy or the woman or the person with the truck, guess what you get called to do a lot? Move things. and not little things. And you find yourself halfway up a staircase trying to make an angle with a couch and someone's yelling, pivot, pivot, pivot. And you're yelling, shut up, shut up, shut up. I was talking to somebody else about their truck and he goes, I just give them the keys now. And I'm like, oh, and then another guy, yeah, but then it gets all banged up and dented. But you know what it made me think of in that analogy? That's life. Friendships, you get stuck on corners, you get banged up, you get dented. Because you know what the Bible says about burdens? We shouldn't let people carry them alone. So maybe we need to be a friend who has a truck. And we carry the burdens of one another. Even when we can't pivot around the corner, we got to figure something else out. At least we're in it together. A real friend who walks in. A real friend is someone who walks in when the rest of the world walks out. Application is this: show up not just when it's convenient, but especially when it's costly. You might have to get your groceries another day. You might have to pause the laundry. You might not have to go to the coffee shop right now because you need to divert to go here. Ask yourself, am I someone my friends would call in adversity? Am I someone they would call? Here's the takeaway. Stay when it's easier to leave. That's what it looks like to live in a friendship. Truth number three, friends sharpen you. Friends sharpen you. We're going to look at three verses in our last chapter here. But have any of you ever sharpened a knife? If you do it the wrong way, what happens? There you go. And it dulls. Both things can happen, and both things have happened to me before. So if we use this word sharpen, we're going to dig into it a little bit more. Friends sharpen you. So here's the first part of sharpening. Three ways we sharpen friends and friends sharpen us. One, speak the truth even when it hurts. Speak the truth even when it hurts. Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. We need to be wise and courageous with our friends, and we need friends that are wise and courageous who will challenge and confront us when necessary. Sometimes softly and thoughtfully and gently, but sometimes directly and clearly. This requires trust and time because time is the great incubator of trust. We can't just wait in if we haven't deposited enough collateral trust into the emotional bank account of our friends. And if you want to make a withdrawal that's going to require you to say something difficult, you better have deposited a heavy dose of trust in being there for people. See, the church does something really bad. We try to build superficial relationships and dig deep, meaningful conversations. And we've got to be better about the way, before I give a spiritual slam to you, I need to do a spiritual encouragement with you. So make sure you're balancing that out. A good example of my life, because I'm, you know, confession's good for the soul and bad for the reputation, but I don't even have a good reputation, so here we go. All right? I ran a camp, and this has happened three times in my life: college, camp, and then later when I was a church leader. But at camp, I became the program director of this great camp in Montana called Clydehurst. And we run these things the last 5 weeks of summer. We run family camps where families come in, rent a cabin for the week. And there's like literally 30, 40 families up there staying in cabins, all sorts of activities: horse riding, fishing, hiking. You know, we cook the meals, we have chapel services, bonfires. But one of the biggest things that goes on during the week is people sign up the first night to form a volleyball team with their friends and their family. And we have this volleyball tournament that goes on every night. So every night there's at least two or three, you know, family volleyball games going on down below. And it gets competitive, highly competitive. And my, you know, about my second year there, you know, I'm taking this volleyball thing very seriously because here I am, I'm the coach. I would coach football, basketball, volleyball. I'm a PE teacher. And they're like, there's ways you have to play sports. There's rules for a reason. You can't just hit the ball like this. You can't just do this. All right? And they're not playing volleyball right, okay? So I'm trying to make it more fair and more inclusive by making people follow the rules. So I'm actually down there with a whistle around my neck and calling things and refereeing this volleyball game. And I feel like the spirit of the camp just shifting towards a different direction. And I'm like, well, you guys, I just can't let people play volleyball. Come on. So I go up to the dining hall one night and sit down at a table with some friends that I'd known for a while. And they were talking to me, and they had just got done playing volleyball. I go, looks like you guys won. They go, yeah. And I'm like, you don't seem very excited. And one of my friends, Travis, all right, hey, Travis, he goes, you know what the problem is, Scott? I go, what? He goes, you're a jerk. Wounds of a friend, all right? I'd rather have the stab in the gut, though, than Brutus, you know, the stab in the back. And he's like, you're a jerk. And by the way, I've been told this a few times at other points in my life. I'm a slow learner. And I'm like, what? Wait, what do you mean? He's like, dude, you can't have volleyball rules here. It's camp. It's fun. You're taking all the fun and joy out of it. Just let people play. It's like a backyard volleyball. I go, but we played by rules in the backyard. I go, that's your problem. Don't be a jerk. And I'm like, what? And I looked at his wife, Heidi, who's a lot kinder at times. And then I found out, no, she's not. She's like, yeah, you're being a jerk. I go, like, what? How am I a jerk? She opens up a notebook. Let me count the ways here. I'm like, you're taking notes? She goes, someone's got to tell you, Scott, or no one's going to tell you. All that to say is this. We're still friends these 35 years later. And you know what? I try not to be a jerk. But you got to have people in your life that are willing to say, hey, you're out of line. This isn't working. So those are the things that we sharpen one another, and we have to be able to share the hard things in love, in the Spirit of God. So here it is. Don't just hang out, all right? Help each other grow, all right? Make sure you're saying some things that you need to say to each other. Here's the next point about sharpening. Proverbs 27:9. We need to give heartfelt encouragement and receive it. 27:9. Oil and perfume makes the heart glad. So another's counsel is sweet to a friend. A well-timed word can change someone's entire outlook. Our encouragement, though, must be authentic and not some canned thing you ran through ChatGPT to find out what's the best thing do I say when my husband's mad at me or my wife is angry with me. It can't work that way. You got to be authentic. When your friend is hurting, our counsel should be specific and from the heart that listens actively and intently. And we respond to the need. We must lead with empathy before we offer encouragement. Brene Brown says, and our words should be delivered in gentleness as they are often spoken into one's most vulnerable moments. Here's the application. Our encouragement should be specific, sincere, and sensitive. The takeaway is, your words can refresh a soul. They can reframe a perspective. Are we people that do that for each other? Are you somebody that does that for others? We need to give heartfelt encouragement to one another along with the direct, honest feedback. The last thing from Proverbs 27 is this. We need to help each other grow. Proverbs 27:17 says this. As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Growth can't happen together. A knife doesn't sharpen itself. But as you're sharpening one another, somebody yelled out, it can cut you. We got to be careful that our sharpening isn't causing more wounds than it's causing more growth. Sometimes the wound is needed, but then do we stay there and do we treat the wound? Do we help it heal? Do we sew it up? Do we be part of the medic that is there to help them on their way to recovery? This verse is reminding us that we are friendship is more than just warm, happy, joyful times. It is also meant to grow us in our darkest times, sharpen us into the character of God, and prepare us in season and out of season when we can truly help others. Wisdom is not found in isolation. It's found in real friendship. And real friendship is often forged in the fires of friction and faith. Do you have friends that you can be at friction with? Do you have friends that will stay in it when it gets heated and difficult? And out of it, you become a better person. Most of us live in a society where people walk away from friction. They run. It's too hot. It's too heated. The application is this. Don't just hang out. Help each other grow, mature, and develop through friction and faith. I invite you to challenge, correct, and hold accountable in your friendships and let people do the same to you. You need to invite that. Help each other grow. Let others help you grow. So let's be practical as we close up today. Let's be practical. How do I do this? You just went through a whole list of things, Scott. You were like just throwing out mottos today, right? And writing everything down. But how does this look like? What are four simple things I can do? I'll give you four. Four simple ways, all right? Here it is, all right? Let me say this. As we're doing this, I want to reemphasize, don't just go looking for friends. This is you to be the friend first. You need to be the friend first before. So this is what you need to do as a friend. One, be present. Put her phone down. Unplug. Meet in person. Be present. Get less hurried and less distracted. Make space for real conversations in your life. Just be present. Sometimes you don't need to say anything. My dad was in the medical field for a long time as an anesthesiologist, and oftentimes he'd do these rounds where they go in and pre-meet with people for surgery, and doctors would come in, and they would talk and say things. And sometimes my dad said I would just stand in and just stand there with them. Not all the time, but he said sometimes all they needed was just someone to stand there with them until they came and walked, and I'd walked with them down to the room. Present sometimes is all we need. Just be present. Two, be honest. And when I say honest, I mean authentic. You can't fake this. Show up as yourself. Don't be something you're not. Be yourself. All right? Don't fake it. This requires vulnerability and honesty. So show up. Be yourself. Don't be fake. Three, be loyal. Stick around when it's difficult. Life is messy and confusing and scary. Can you wade into that and stick around even when it gets difficult? Trust me, I have had to stick around in some messy, difficult relationships in my life. I have had to walk with some friends and some people that there I didn't really want to walk with. But I have learned more from that journey than perhaps the person I walked with. I learned more about myself, more about my own perspectives and biases, more about myself and God and how God relates to me. If you want God to walk with you through your messiness, you better be loyal and walk through everybody else's messiness that means something to you. Be curious. Ask thoughtful questions beyond just small talk. Like, what are you doing this weekend? What about the weather? What about the Mariners? Da, da, da. I love small talk, all right? Because I don't want to get into deep talk with everybody. But sometimes we got to get curious and start asking the right questions. Are we genuinely interested in what's going on in our friends' lives? Here's the big idea again. Wisdom isn't a solo sport. The people around us are shaping who we become for better or worse. So choose friends wisely and choose to be a wise friend. Come on, the band can start coming up. I want to ask this today, though. Some of us are sitting here going, oh man, I'm so thankful for my friends. I'm going to go do this more with my friends. I need to do this. I could be a better friend this way. Yet I also know some people are here just going, I don't even know if I have that type of friend. I wouldn't even know what to do. So where are you lonely? Where have you settled for isolation instead of relationship? And if that's you today, we're here to walk with you. We're here to meet with you and talk with you. Who are your friends? Are they shaping you into God's calling you to be, or are they just hangout buddies? Nothing wrong with that. We need hangout buddies. I got some of them. But who are your true godly friends? Are you a wise friend? Who are you sharpening? Start with personal, local, immediate. Rather than looking out at what everybody else should be doing, what are you doing? Are you that friend? Don't wait for deep friendships to happen. We need to pursue them, fight for them, nurture them, grow them, invest in them. And we need to receive and accept the same thing back. I can tend to be a person that will give a lot but not receive a lot. I need to work on receiving more. I have an action for this week. I want you to connect with one person this week. Connect in an intentional way. Have a real conversation. Maybe grab a coffee, go for a walk, get together, and ask some good questions. And then listen intently and actively as to what they're saying. Christians that thrive in Christ and in life will thrive later in their friendships. But you've got to thrive in Christ first. And I truly believe when you strive with people, you'll thrive with those people. And when you strive with God, you will thrive with God. And that's the only way that God brings us closer to Him is through discomfort and struggles. So why should it be no different in our friendships? Wisdom is not found in isolation. It's found in real friendships. And real friendships are forged in the fires of friction and faithfulness. May we be faithful to God. May we be faithful and wise to one another. God, I thank you for this opportunity to learn from you. I thank you that you show us the example of what it means to be a friend, God. May we just mimic and model and reciprocate what you do for us every day. You are the wisest of all friends. May we be a reflection of that wisdom in the people around us. Open our eyes to ourselves, God, so we may be better, and help us help our friends be better. All in the name of you. In your holy name.